The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. This is PFW in Progress.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
I'm going to need you to go ahead and come in tomorrow. So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Oh, and I almost forgot. I'm also going to need you to go ahead and come in on Sunday, too. Okay, thanks.
Paul Perillo.
Well, look, I already told you. I deal with the goddamn customers so the engineers don't have to. I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand that? What the hell is wrong with you people?
And Andy. And Andy?
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
Andy Hart.
I'm thinking I might take that new chick from logistics. Things go well, I might be showing her my O face. Oh. You know what I'm talking about.
Eric Scalavino, for now anyway.
It's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care. When I make a mistake, I have 8 different people coming by to tell me about it. That's my only real motivation, is not to be hassled. That'll only make someone work just hard enough not to get fired.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Every single day of my life has been worse than the day before it. So that means that every single day that you see me, that's on the worst day of my life.
What about today? Is today the worst day of your life?
Yeah.
Wow, that's messed up.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. It is Thursday here at Gillette Stadium. And pretty quiet here football-wise. Not a lot going on, but PFW in Progress continues to trudge on towards training camp. I guess less than 2 weeks now before training camp starts.
2 weeks from today.
Yeah, Brian Morey's here.
Public training camp.
Executive director of the Hall of Patriot Place.
What's up, Freddie?
By Raytheon. And
the big question, Fred, is what are they doing out next to the lighthouse?
Presented by Raytheon.
Well, with all the tractors and all
that
stuff?
Yeah, digging up over there. What are they doing?
I think they're
you must be privy.
I only assume that they're redoing that New England landscape thing they've got going on down there.
Why, it wasn't New England anymore?
Well, I mean, you know, this is really not a football thing. This is more of a Gillette Stadium aesthetic thing. But I've always maintained, and I've put it to vote, and I've always won, that
of course you have,
that we should change that lighthouse to make it look like an authentic New England
lighthouse. Oh, I agree with you.
Now, going a step further, you know, now that we see all these tractors down there below that, when if people...
You want to put beach sand
down
there.
Well, for people who haven't been to Gillette Stadium, as you walk through the main gate there, there's a bridge. You go under the bridge, and to your right, there's rocks and, you know, sort of...
Shrubs.
Seagrass.
Yeah.
And, yeah, New England-type landscape. I would put a water feature there. Why not? You know, some type of running water so that, you know, this is New England. And when you look at New England, 5 of the 6 New England states border the ocean. You know, so
just for looks, you mean?
Because
no one would get to enjoy it. You're not talking about like the Arizona Diamondbacks stadium.
No, you don't go swimming.
Where there's a pool.
No, but I think there should be a water feature.
I think a pool would be great.
Yeah. No, I think a water feature, you know, along with the lighthouse.
A lap pool for the employees.
And I would even put some speakers so if you're close, you can hear seagulls and some sounds of the ocean. I think that would be cool.
I like it, Fred.
You know?
I like it. I see why people voted with you.
Right.
Because I'm voting with you.
Yeah. So anyway, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the ace ticket hotline. 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500, toll free. We'll be here until 2 o'clock. Brian Morey again is here. No Sox could be joining us.
He actually just walked in. He's right behind you, walking through the door or
approaching
the door momentarily.
No Sox. Matt Smith, executive director of Kraft Sports Productions, just came from Arizona.
He did.
Where he was out with Darrell Revis.
So, just hanging out?
Yeah, so he can talk about that when he gets here.
Ah, nice. So come on in, Smitty.
So that'll be good. And, of course, we're going to be taking your calls and emails. Emails still coming in about Tom Brady and linebacker depth, so we'll get to all that. But I did have a question for you, Brian, regarding the hall voting.
Okay.
August 1st will be the induction ceremony for Ty Law.
It will.
And, you know, that'll be great.
And July 31st, we have a sold-out speaker series with Ty.
Right? Now, I know that you're not in charge of the voting. It's a fan vote.
You know? Correct.
You have a panel based on, comprised of, beat writers, some of them former beat writers. And it really, I just lost myself. What happened here? Oh, Matt. It's just Matt. You know, some of the beat writers are...
Some of the beat writers, current and past.
And past. Some have been here since the start.
Yeah.
So it's a good sampling of...
Yes.
Of, you know...
Matt Smith is on that committee.
Of coverage for Patriots. And plus there's, some people...
Ernie Adams on that committee.
He's on the panel. So there's a real good sampling of it. Paul Perillo's on the panel.
Paul Perillo. Andre Tippett.
So, but do you think that there's a problem, as some people think, that... You know, over the next few years, guys like Rodney Harrison and Willie McGinnis will be getting in.
Absolutely not.
Some guys like Raymond Claiborne will never get in.
Absolutely not.
You don't think there's a problem?
I do not think there's a problem.
I happen to agree with you, but...
They won Super Bowls.
Yeah.
I know that's not the end-all, be-all, but look, let's take Andre in regards to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, we all agree that Andre is a Pro Football Hall of Famer, right?
Right.
Okay, and...
Hands down.
And to be honest with you, I don't think he's that far behind Lawrence Taylor. I mean, he played on the tight end side. Lawrence didn't
win a Super Bowl.
Well, exactly. Right. And that's, I think that kept him out for a while. And that's okay. Now, does it make it right? No, he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. And he should be in. But the fact that these guys were great players on teams that won championships carries extra weight.
Yeah,
the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s have, what, 9 Pro Football Hall of Famers? Because they won 4 Super Bowls. So I definitely think it's legitimate that those guys, because they won and they were great players here, get extra consideration. I know people want to say, well, they're modern and this and that, and it's voted online. So the online factor is more of an – maybe more relevant to what you're saying because – maybe a lot of older folks aren't going online and voting. So the people that watched Raymond Claiborne or Houston Antoine or Larry Eisenhower or pick a guy from the 60s, 70s,
right.
they're not voting. So the modern guys get an edge that way. But the fact that they won Super Bowls and they were great players, they deserve to be in, I think, before those other guys.
Okay. Matt, you got an opinion?
Well, has there been an injustice yet? I guess I would ask you, is there a hue and cry where either between the committee hasn't presented the right candidate for the fans to vote, or have the fans voted on the wrong guy? And I would say, based on the short sample size that we have so far, I would say no.
Well, I'm just starting to hear it. You heard it from... I think Borges talking about Parcells this year, and we heard it in the room that
right, let's
you
talk
know
about
it's
that.
Kind of weighted against some of the older guys, and you know
who's
Chuck
the guy,
Fairbanks may never get in.
Who's the guy on Boston.com that wrote about that? About Parcells and how he's a no brainer.
Was that Chad Finn?
It was either Chad Finn. Who's the other guy?
But
Bob Volin. Bob something Volin.
Ben Volin
didn't write about that.
No,
I'm pretty sure he did.
I'll tell you who did write about him. It was Mike Reese. And Mike Reese wrote about it during the balloting and came out strongly and said, in his mind, he thinks Parcells deserves to be in the Patriots Hall of Fame. Now, you could say I believe in Santa Claus and all that other stuff. I think there's going to be a day that Parcells is going to get into the team.
Okay, so listen.
For people to think... And I don't have any inside information on this by any stretch, that people think that some sort of, because of the fact that there was a disagreement when he left and that's keeping him out of the Hall of Fame, I don't think anything could be further from the truth. I think to the point that you guys are talking about, that there are Ty Laws and Teddy Bruschi's and Troy Browns, the guys whose career, Laws notwithstanding, basically were entirely with the Patriots, those guys are going to get in before Parcells.
Listen, over at the Hall of Fame, I would love to induct Bill Parcells.
Presented by Raytheon.
I think it would be a great day. And I think he is worthy of Hall of Fame consideration. But this whole notion that he's a no-brainer is...
No, I don't think he's a no-brainer.
I agree with that. People do, and that's what I read on Boston.com. He brought credibility to the Patriots. Well, why did he bring credibility to the Patriots? Huh? Why?
Why did he?
Yeah, what credibility did he have?
Because he was a Super Bowl winning head coach.
2-time.
Right.
With who?
With the Giants.
Okay, that puts him in the Giants Hall of Fame, not the Patriots Hall of Fame. The credibility that he brought was exactly what this organization needed. okay? He changed the culture. He won and took this team to a Super Bowl.
Well, that's all.
Okay, he's worthy.
Don't you think that's all one in the same?
But it's not a no-brainer. The credibility thing came for his accomplishments
If you had brought in Bill Parcells and he had fallen flat on his face, then it would be a no-brainer that he's not in. He doesn't get in just because he was a Super Bowl-winning coach. He brought credibility and followed that up by...
But people believe that he saved the team. This is what I read online.
Robert Kraft saved the team.
I'm going to find... No kidding.
Right.
I'm going to find this.
You used the words, changed the culture. And if he gets into the Patriots Hall of Fame, that's why he would be getting into the Patriots Hall of Fame, because of the words that you just used. But, he changed the culture.
But wait a minute. What is... Is Bill Belichick a Hall of Famer here?
Oh.
Yeah.
Right.
Now that's a no-brainer.
Right.
He's the only one that's ever won a Super Bowl here. Okay? Did Chuck Fairbanks change the culture when he got here?
And I think there's some sentiment that Chuck Fairbanks belongs in the team Hall of Fame.
I would agree. Right. I nominated him 4 years in a row.
Right. So I think they're very similar situations between Fairbanks
and Parcells. I don't think Chuck Fairbanks is a no-brainer.
No, he's not a no-brainer.
No-brainer.
So I don't think Parcells is any more worthy than Chuck Fairbanks.
I agree.
That's fair.
I agree.
But nobody writes about Chuck Fairbanks being a no-brainer. It bothers me.
The other thing that people say in favor of Parcells is that he brought in a lot of talent, which he did, but then he himself complained that he didn't get to pick the groceries. So who really brought in the talent?
Well,
you know?
I think that was at the end.
That was in reference to one player.
Bobby Greer was here when they picked Teddy Bruschi and all those guys, Ted Johnson and Willie McGinnis and Ty Law.
But Fred, don't rewrite history.
What?
We know there was a dispute in 1996 about who they picked.
About Terry Glenn.
And Robert had to step in and make a decision to go with Bobby or go with Bill.
So,
and he went with Bobby for the right reasons.
All that tells me then, or what it could tell me, that prior to that, Bobby Greer gave him the players and Parcells agreed with it.
Well, but we don't know that.
We don't know that, you know? So up to then, they didn't have many disagreements, and that was the big disagreement that Kraft had to weigh in on, you know, and pick Terry Glenn. Because in Kraft's words, he pays millions of dollars to a scouting department, we have to rely on their judgment. So it was the scouting department that was saying Terry Glenn, and I think Parcells wanted Cedric Jones, if I'm correct.
Yes, so, I think that's correct. From Clemson?
I don't know. But anyway... All right. I just thought I'd throw that out there. You know, seeing that we had the executive director of the Hall of Patriot Place presented by Raytheon.
Presented by Raytheon.
We should talk about that. So, and again, August 1st is when we have the induction ceremony, and that's open to everyone.
Correct.
That's free on the plaza.
It's a great day. And then I think after that, you can come and watch the team practice.
Yep.
In the evening. Can't be a better day.
Right.
Great bang for your buck.
Yep. So, Matt, you're here. And you just got
you're
back.
Here, Matt.
Thanks for your invite.
You just got back from Arizona. Tell us about why you were out there and what happened when you got there.
Well, we went there because we were under the idea that Darrelle Revis was going to be out there and training to get ready for training camp. And I guess I ask you guys who have been around for a while and seen different teams come and go. But what was surprising to me was that not only was Revis there from the Patriots, but Logan Ryan, Devin McCourty, and Tavon Wilson were there.
Wow.
And I guess gone are the days, and I don't know if these days ever existed, that once OTAs are over and before training camp, these guys aren't sitting on the beach eating hot dogs. I'm sure these guys have always been staying in shape, but maybe with the money now today in the game and things like that, the commitment to really be at your peak when training camp starts is the priority, and to a man, that's what they all said.
Now, when you say they were there, was this at a facility? Yeah, was this like a Revis hosted thing, or like was this like his?
Is this the place Pedroia was?
No, I think those places might be a dime a dozen. I'm not so sure, but Revis has a relationship with this place in Arizona.
Okay, and so he hosted it, sort of.
I think he's been going
right,
and I think Logan Ryan went last year before the combine. And he went last year after OTAs.
Okay.
But McCourty and Tavon Wilson were there because those other guys. Oh, Revis is going? Let's go. And McCourty said to me he flew in Sunday of this past week. He's going to be in there for 2 weeks. And he goes, look, he goes, it's football season. People can train here at Gillette, and I'm sure they're going to get a lot out of it and everything like that. I just felt like I'm going to leave my fiance at home. I'm going to just pack up, and I just want to concentrate on trying to get better and being at my best for 2 weeks. And when you hear something like that, and that permeates with the other players, That kind of gets you excited for training camp to get started, doesn't it?
It does. It's almost like a little mini camp for defensive backs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And well, you could see the camaraderie building, and they all talked about that. They said, hey, look, it's one thing to be in the meeting room. It's one thing to watch tape together. It's one thing to look at what you did in practice. He goes, but it's got to continue off the field. And the fact that the four of them could be there together, working out and hanging out together, and they're going to be there for a couple of weeks, I think that's pretty interesting.
Hmm.
And I think it bodes well. You know, listen, just because you're running cone drills together at 9 o'clock in the morning doesn't mean you're going to be able to make a play on 3rd and 8. But I think that cohesiveness and that camaraderie,
yeah,
it can't hurt.
I think it's terrific.
Right.
And you know, working together, getting to know each other so that you can communicate more seamlessly during the game, and just maybe it's a look here or something that you've talked about and worked on your own. You know, because coverages nowadays have, you know, you're doing stuff after the snap and trying to disguise things, and you're reacting to what the formation might be. Whereas look at the Patriots when they run the two tight ends and then they motion them out. Well, there's an instant adjustment in the secondary, and having that communication is critical to being strong against the pass.
Right. I talked to a former player today and said, you know, what was it like in your day? Did something like this or akin to this happen back when you played? And he goes, no. He goes, I mean, we wanted to stay in shape. We wanted to make sure that we didn't gain any weight in between the time. He goes, but I think nowadays there's so much at stake for these guys. Jobs are on the line. You know that maybe other guys are doing it on other teams, and this is the kind of commitment that's required of you nowadays in order to make sure that when camp starts,
yep,
you're not in camp to get in shape. You better be in top shape.
And you talk about culture, and we talked about Bill Parcells changing the culture when he got in here. I remember, you know, in 1995, first week of camp, he cut Eugene Chung. Eugene Chung was a fairly high draft pick, and just cut him. And, you know, that was something that would never happen here. And you could see that with Bill Parcells, too. Guys know it starts with Tom Brady, although, you know, maybe he doesn't actually believe it, but he knows that you're fighting for your job every day, you know? And, you know, we talked about bringing in Garoppolo, and even though Brady knows he's not a threat to his job, it's a little bit of a, okay.
Why isn't he?
Well,
I mean, listen, not maybe this year, but
look, if
he could be.
If Garoppolo would have
Bledsoe
to go out
thought
there.
That too.
Yeah, Garoppolo would have to go out there and, you know, change Gatorade into wine in order for
this year
to do anything. But, you know, Brady knows that down the line, somebody is going to challenge him. It's just going to happen eventually.
I think what keeps Brady great is the fact that he assumes somebody will challenge
yes,
him.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and whether that's from Michigan and having that chip on his shoulder and always, you know, battling with Drew Henson and, you know, for whatever the reason, it's good. It's a good thing.
It's the Troy Brown philosophy. I love this line from Troy Brown. He used to say, I just walk in the locker room every day and make sure my stuff is still in there.
Yeah.
Meaning he never took anything for granted. Not one day in this league. And I think that's what made Troy Brown who he was.
Absolutely. All right. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket hotline. 855-PATS-500 is the toll-free number. Why don't we just go right into the calls and emails, huh? Just
sure.
Get them going? All right. First one's from Orlando, who's in Springfield. I assume that's Springfield, Mass. Hey, Orlando.
Hey, what's going on, Fred? How's things, man?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Hey, listen, man, quick question, man. Hearing rumors that I think they're talking about, Andre Johnson with the Texans. There's rumors that he might be working on a trade with him.
Well, what I heard this morning is that he's still not happy in Houston. So I haven't heard anything about a trade happening. Has any – Matt, Brian, have you heard anything?
I have not.
No.
Yeah, Brian doesn't listen to sports radio.
He does not.
By design. He hates sports radio. But I just heard that he's still disgruntled.
I used to.
So I don't know. I think it'd be great. But, again, we talked about Andre Johnson. You're going to have to give up a lot to get him and pay him a lot when he gets here. So,
all right. Let's just say for the sake of argument, though. Let's say for the sake of argument he actually does come here. Two questions. One, how do you think he'll fit into the system we already have here? And two, who's the odd man out if he does show up?
That's a good question.
If Andre Johnson shows up?
If Andre Johnson shows up, I think he's the kind
of somebody.
Andre Johnson doesn't have a lot of speed. He's not a burner. He's a bigger guy that can get open, and he can get downfield if you give your quarterback time. You know, the odd man out, I don't know. Maybe it's Tompkins for sure, you know. Maybe LaFell. I don't know.
How many are they going to carry? Five?
But here's the thing about, you know.
Six plus Slater.
Here's the thing about looking at depth of roster and figuring out. You have, you know, a month to figure that out. And you need the camp body. So bringing him in doesn't mean an immediate move has to be made. Let camp and time figure that out for you.
Okay, so what would you give up for him?
But I think Fred hit it right. It's one thing to say that Andre Johnson wants out of Texas, but what are you going to give up for him? Because I don't think Texas isn't going to take anything less than, I don't think, a number one for him.
I would not give a number one for him.
I wouldn't either.
And you're going to have to pay the guy because he wants to get paid. You know, people confuse things because they remember Moss. Moss's career was in the toilet at the time, and you could get Moss on a team-friendly kind of a deal.
Fourth-round pick.
Right. And you didn't have to pay him because he was on an existing contract. It was only after he broke records in 2007 where you said, okay, and you had him for a year, where you said, well, you know what, I think this guy buys in. He's going to be our type of guy. Now let's pay him. And then you saw what happened after you paid him.
Well, and they didn't give him like a 7-year deal. I
mean, no, but they gave him a market deal, though. His annual value was at the high end of what receivers got. It was a short term, but it was a big ticket number.
Now, I don't think that Andre Johnson has the reputation as a dog that Randy Moss had.
No.
So I don't think. How old is he? That's my first
32,
question.
32, I think, but that can be easily checked.
So my point is, I think you have to be wary of how long you're going to pay somebody at that age, at that position, who's had some injuries. And if you're going to – a first-round pick is out of the question. I don't think anyone's going to give up a first-round pick for him. They're not getting a first-round pick for him, I don't think. I mean, I could be wrong. Somebody desperate or close who thinks they're close and is that player away might do that. But if, I mean, market deal for him is going to be, 12 to $20 million signing bonus somewhere in there? I mean, that's you give up a high draft pick plus you have to dole that out? No way.
Yeah.
It'd be tough.
Well, he's going to be 33 years old. I mean, is that going to factor in terms of what they give him for a long term or even a short term deal?
For a smart team, it should.
Well, the real thing is, what is the exact reason he wants out of Houston? You know, does he want out that bad where a team that wanted to take him in could negotiate a short-term deal with him just so he, you know, prove it to me type of deal? Or, you know, could he stay and just keep taking the money? It just depends on how bad he wants to get out of there, because I don't see any team really giving up a first-round pick for him.
He's under contract, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
For how many more years?
I think it's just the one.
Is it?
Yeah.
So you could conceivably not. I mean, if you gave up a fourth-round pick for him, something like that, because he's not going to – if he said he's not going to play there and they just unload him and say it's a third or a fourth-round pick, do you risk only having him for a year if you do that?
Well, that's the other thing. And plus, I read when this first came around that if Houston were to do that, they'd be on the hook for a lot of dead money, which is another reason
why – Well, not if he's in the last year of his contract.
No. Well, maybe it's not the last year, but I remember reading where – there's a significant amount of money where they have to put on their books if they get rid of him. So maybe he's not there for just one more year under his contract.
I'll try to look that up for
you. Yeah.
Cool. Hey, thanks a lot, Fred. Take care, guys.
All right, Orlando. Sorry we didn't have more info. I heard today that he was still unhappy, but that's all I had read. I hadn't heard anything more.
So wouldn't you agree that...
Oh, he signed through 2016.
Okay. So two more years.
For the Patriots to be interested... The compensation is going to have to to acquire him. The compensation is going to have to come way down. Where obviously Houston wants to get as much as they can. If it gets down to the third, fourth round sort of draft pick, then maybe they're interested.
Yeah.
And if he's willing to take a haircut, to negotiate, then they'd be interested.
Yeah, tear it up and let's redo it.
Other than that,
base salaries. This year $10 million. Next year $10.5 million. 2016 $11 million. Those are his base salaries.
Yeah.
The Texans, actually, the signing bonus money is less than $500,000 a year. So there's roster bonuses
in the
contract.
But what did they, when they first did it, what did they spread out?
But, okay, well, this is the signing bonus cap hit here. So it was 2.6, 2.6, 2.6 from 10, 11, and 12, and then 469,000 for the next 3 years, 13, 14, and 15. Now there's roster bonuses and option bonuses in there, and oh, there's a restructure bonus too. Okay, that's where it comes in. Yeah, they would take a bath. $4 million a year. Essentially,
yeah.
So over the
$4 million a year,
$4 million, $8 million,
accelerated about, to 1 year,
about $12 to $13 million this year,
right?
Or they could split that over two,
right? So getting rid of them means they'd have to make adjustments elsewhere.
Yeah, that's an awfully big bite out of the apple when you talk about your salary cap.
That's what I remember reading. Eldridge is obviously going to tell us that we need to get Andre Johnson at all costs, right, Eldridge?
Yeah, I would, but. Yeah, but I'll give him a second round for him.
Okay, you know? I would too. But now, what are you willing to pay him per year?
Well, he already trusted just like Miles and everybody else did. Now, if he's about $8 million or $9 million, yes, he's better than what you got. He's better than Edelman. He's better than Amendola. Dawson ain't ready to play. Ball's just inconsistent. You should give Brady one reliable target on the outside, which we need. I would give him that. Yeah. At least for 2 to 3 years, because he's 34. But if he could catch 1,200 yards from Case Keenum and Yates with Houston, with a so-so offense, imagine what he could do with Brady.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
And you know what? You wouldn't be on the hook for any of his bonus money if you traded for him. What makes you think you have to restructure it? I mean, unless you're trying to lower his salary. But if you got him for 3 years and $31 million,
it's not the bonus money the Patriots be. They'd be on the hook
for
his base salary, which you said
was 10, 5, and 11.
Oh, right.
Is he not worth that?
I would say this right now, and my guess is Fred would know this better than I, but based on what the Patriots' current cap situation is today on July 10th or the 9th or whatever it is, my guess if they made the trade today, they couldn't fit him under the cap.
There
would have to be some sort of
adjustment. I could be wrong. There's a guy that keeps Miguel who keeps a pretty good tab on it. I thought it was $7 million right now.
So you couldn't – I mean, you have to – somebody would have to go in order to fit Johnson in right now.
Well,
right.
In that case, you take some of the people that you know ain't going to make it and let them go. Like I said, my question is this. You get Brandon LaFell, $19, $16 million. You don't show one OTA, other ones you don't know where yet. And to me, it wasn't worth that. If it was, Carolina Panthers would have kept, at least there'd be one liable target for Cam Newton. Obviously, they didn't want him either. You know?
Eldridge, do you have any insight? Have you read exactly what Andre Johnson's beef is with Houston?
He said it a couple times in an interview. He didn't want to do a rebuilding stage anymore. In his career, he want to win.
I know, but, you know, last year was a terrible year, obviously, but the year before, they were the only thing that stopped them was the Patriots.
But they got rid of his quarterback.
Yeah, okay, so that's what it is. He liked Matt Schaub?
Matt Schaub, he got rid of his quarterback.
Okay.
And now they're in the rebuilding stage
right. With
a new coaches with no philosophy.
Yeah, so he still doesn't see a quarterback there. I mean, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
And then put him with Brady, Hall of Famer. Patriots there, knocking on the door every year. Come on, it's no brainer.
Yeah,
it's no brainer. Now, if Denver hadn't paid Sanders, I guarantee you Denver would after.
Yeah, they might be interested. They would have been interested, but like you said, they gave a lot of money to Emmanuel Sanders. So, and they've got a pretty good roster right now in terms of receivers. So,
and Fred,
yeah,
your podcast from Tuesday when we talked, I hung up and I listened to it. You was wrong
about
again.
We was in prediction to get one of the top receivers in the draft. Both times we traded out of last year was Cordell Patterson. Young Rodgers started coming up like that. Russell though, kick returner and receiver. Something that Bill liked. Let that go. He had the chance.
We'll see.
Reuben Randall. Let him go.
We'll see.
The Giants and you keep the Minnesota. You had two opportunities.
All right.
You know, just sitting right there.
I don't know. I
right there at the draft team. Now, he was the number one Patterson, number one receiver in the draft.
Yeah. Well,
right there, 29.
I don't know. I unless this guy's a blue chipper in the first round, I got to think that I want to help my team elsewhere. I really do. And I get what you're saying. You know, but the Patriots offense, it's not like it was terrible last year. It was still top five offense. But they need help on defense. I mean, I was listening to the numbers on third down. over the last 5 years, and it's just horrific.
They're 26th last year.
Yeah, it's just horrific. So I'm, you know, now you can argue that they haven't done the right thing to help the defense, but you got to keep trying to help that defense.
Well, see, I would think that if you look at it through the years, they have been trying to help the defense. Where they are, where, and there's not much of an argument, you know, all of their attempts really haven't panned out.
Right. But, you know, it may all come together this year, because right now they've got a lot of good talent, high picks, invested in that defense. So
I would say the problem with the lack of an ability to upgrade it has come in the second round with some picks like Darius Butler and Rozai Dowling, defensive backs that you think that are high picks that have come in here and not played well, or in Rozai Dowling's case, not played at all.
Well, because they've put a lot of they've devoted a lot of assets to try to fix the problem. They just, the assets haven't panned out.
Right. By the way, they have approximately almost $7 million in cap room. You were right. Yep. According to this unofficial source.
Now, there are some, and this would still, and they like to be around that spot going into the year so that they can make a move for an Aqib Talib at the trading deadline, or what was Joe Green's name that they got from San Francisco or from Philadelphia this past training?
Oh, Isaac Sapagoa?
Yes.
So whatever his name is.
Sapagoa, you know?
Right.
They want to have that flexibility.
$1 million of dead money on their cap for him, by the
Correct.
Way.
Correct. But in order to get, if you were to let this thing play out with Johnson, then you're talking about what do? You know, guys like Connolly and Wendell, you know, who could be cap casualties potentially in at the end of the summer after training camp.
Well, you notice what
there's
they're doing.
A corresponding move.
You know, if you looked at the OTAs in the mini camp, Josh Klein was getting a lot of reps. And, you know, he's a guy that, okay, if you need to get rid of Connolly or Wendell, he's a guy that can move into that guard position. So I think they're getting ready for that eventuality if they have to do it. Because Connolly, I think it's like $3 or $4 million.
Mm-hmm. Four million.
$4 million. So that's, you know, significant.
And with the kid at Florida State being groomed as the heir apparent, don't you think?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you go and get, if you were to trade for Andre Johnson and just keep the existing contract, let's just say you give up a second for him. Let's go as high as a second. And you make room for him by making moves like that. Guys like Connolly, maybe Arrington. Who's on the books for 3.6? I know you love Arrington, Fred, but
Eldridge would love that. He would have a party if they got.
So you could do, and I think you upgrade your offense enough that with the defensive upgrades you've made, with the emergence maybe of Collins, Jones another year, Revis and Brown are in the secondary.
Yeah,
maybe that's good enough.
Yeah,
to win a championship.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't talk about that. We got Miami in week one, but I'm just saying.
All right, let's go to the emails, webradio@patriots.com. Mark is up first. He says, this season's Patriots defense, if remaining relatively healthy, will be dominant and ranked tops in all major categories, thus propel the team to their fourth Lombardi. The O will be steady and sufficient enough, just like they were during the previous Super Bowl winning years. Do you agree or not agree? Or do you think they will be better than advertised, as advertised or not as advertised?
I don't know how they're being advertised, but I don't think they're going to be a dominant defense.
That's a big word.
I think I'm predicting that they will be top five as the NFL ranks defense.
So in
they
yards
will be
allowed,
five. Yeah,
no chance.
Okay,
no chance.
I think they will be. I think this. I think
maybe top 15.
In that category,
yeah.
Yards allowed, okay.
Points allowed, maybe top 10. But
well, they've been already top 10
right.
with the existing defense.
Right.
You know, so.
And a lot of that has been driven by their offense and the time of possession on offense and whatnot. Last year, that slipped a little bit, though.
And their turnover numbers, which had been pretty high the previous 2 years, that came down a little bit, you know. And so I think they're looking for somebody. They need playmakers back there.
Yeah.
And I think their secondary is upgraded significantly with those two guys. Revis and Browner. It's the front seven that I'm worried about. You have two guys that come, we talked about this Tuesday, two guys coming off season-ending injuries that you count on. Behind them are just guys. As Parcells would like to say, Jags, just the guy, right? I mean, with all due respect to the guys who stepped in last year and held their own, and they did, and that's a credit to Chris Jones and
Joe Valano
and that group.
But Salinga did well at the end.
Right.
You know?
But that's what your depth is, and I'm not sure. You certainly can't be dominant with that group if you lose, again, a Tommy Kelly or a Vince Wilfork. And then your linebacking crew is, you know, another guy coming off. Your inside linebacker's coming off a season-ending injury.
He's fine.
You lost Spikes. Now, again, Spikes was a flash guy to me. He wasn't a great player. But so now you got Ninkovich. Is he an end or a line? If you're in a 4-3, he's an end. Yeah. So your linebackers are Collins, Mayo, and
Hightower.
Who's after that?
Well, you got James Anderson.
Okay.
For this team to be dominant. And that's, let's use Fred's word.
And I don't think any of those players are dominant, by the way.
Or actually not Fred's word, the emailer's word. For this team to be dominant, the one guy that you failed to mention in this is Dominic Kiesley. I mean, he's going to have to emerge, and he's going to have to be that situational third down inside rush kind of a guy where these guys haven't been able to get pressure from the inside. And then he's absolutely going to have to pop. And I think
and if he does, that'll help Chandler Jones.
Well, that's, and that's the next
helps
one.
Helps everybody because he's a disruptor.
He's going to have to take the next step.
Right.
Because I think he's a solid player, and we've seen that. But he needs to get to the next level for this team to be, as the emailer is suggesting, dominant.
But if he's a solid player and he doesn't get to that next level, is that good enough for you to win?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, I don't see this being a dominant defense. But it can be good enough that you can, you know, with Tom Brady still as your quarterback.
Well, let's
I mean, you can win with that.
Over the course of the season, now, of course, in the Super Bowl was a different story, but over the course of the season, when Seattle's defense was not playing in Seattle, they weren't dominant.
Right.
Look, they weren't.
The stat number that Coach Belichick loves to say, which is overrated, the Patriots had 48 sacks last year. Would you look at the Patriots defense from 2013 and say, well, they produced 48 sacks? So using the Denver game, the last time we saw him play, they didn't get a sniff on Manning.
And not a sniff. Right.
So where Chandler Jones needs to emerge, he doesn't necessarily be helpful if he did sack them. But that's constant pressure.
Right.
He needs to develop into a guy who they can bring pressure and pressure the quarterback and make him uncomfortable, get him off the spot.
That's where Easley can help.
Right.
If he does what he did in Florida, that's what he did. He wasn't a sack guy.
Right.
He was a guy that created sacks for other people.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they haven't had the probably last guy who was an inside pass rusher, and he certainly wasn't some dominant rusher was maybe what's his name from LSU?
Jarvis Green.
Well, Jarvis Green was a situational guy. They'd bring him in obvious pass situations,
right,
and he'd pick up the scraps. That, you know, because of their technique, they never had an inside guy who was a pass rusher, including Richard Seymour.
Right.
But Richard Seymour was so powerful that he could collapse the pocket from in there.
That's what I'm saying.
And Vince has done that at times as well.
That's what I'm saying. I just as soon see that than the sack numbers. You know, just get the ball out of the hand, disrupt the rhythm of the quarterback. That's all you need to do in this league. But it's hard to do.
Disrupt timing.
It's hard to do. And by the way, Mark is from Lexington, Kentucky. So just wanted to let us know that.
Go Cats.
Jose from almost Mexico, Texas says, first time emailing, I agree with Eric about TB12 declining, but it was more obvious last season with the lack of weapons. Do you think we would have looked better if Mr. Murder was on the field? Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what this offense was based on, him and Gronk really just creating incredible mismatches with defenses. And, yeah, Brady would have looked better. And maybe he wouldn't be declining.
$7.5 million cap hit for him, by the way.
It hurts. It hurts.
Hernandez?
Yeah.
That's his cap hit.
Yeah. It hurts. Let's see. Glenn writes in, I miss the ensemble, but I have to tell you, you're doing a great job. Kudos. Just listening to your podcast for Tuesday's show and heard you talking about the draft again. I used this to do this draft process when I was younger when doing hockey pools for picking players. Oh, and so he's got a whole thing. We can't get into that. It's just too complicated. You know, we were talking about redoing the draft, different systems for doing the draft, but we're not going to get into that now. But I appreciate the email. Let's see. Andrew from Rhode Island writes in. It's 3rd and 10 in the AAC Championship against the Broncos. The Patriots are up by 3, but the Broncos are driving and at midfield. There's less than a minute to go. The Broncos are in the spread with an empty backfield. Who do you put on Demaryius, Julius, Welker, Sanders, and Latimer? For example, Revis would be on Demaryius. Also, who would be on the field, all 11 players? Again, we're really going to...
I mean, I don't know that you're manning up across the board. Right. I mean, right. You know, I don't know what the coverage call is going to be.
I mean, we're assuming, you know, Browner is now part of the mix. So you got Browner, you got Dennard, you got Revis as your corners.
You got Ryan.
You probably Logan have Ryan. Logan Ryan as a fourth cover guy.
And your guy Arrington.
And you have McCourty and Harmon.
Yeah.
You know, so you might have, you're probably in a dime. Right. Right?
And Arrington could be on Welker.
Right. And then you're in a dime. You've got two linebackers, so you probably have Mayo out there. And maybe by that time, Collins is a guy you trust. You know, so maybe Collins is out and maybe Hightower is off the field at that point. You know?
Yeah. Maybe you drop in Collins into the middle of the zone. Yeah. Who says you're in man-to-man? That's what I'm saying.
You laughed about Arrington on Welker. Arrington's best game last year was the Denver game.
No, I'm just kidding. Fred has raved about his slot play.
I don't rave. I just...
He's solid.
He's solid at what he's here to do.
Right. I don't like him on the outside at all.
He's terrible on the
and
outside.
And the reason why he's out there is because of injuries, and they didn't have the right depth.
Right.
Now, on paper, they have the right depth. He's not forced to do the things that he's not good at if everyone is out there.
So let me ask you a question. Let's go back to the Andre Johnson thing for a minute. If it came down to Andre Johnson... Or, because this is what it comes down to, right? Not these two players or specifically, but when you want a player like that, it could be one player or these two or three. And you have to decide what's best for your football team. If it was Andre Johnson or Connolly and Arrington, what do you go with?
I can just tell you traditionally what this football staff has always gone with, and that's two players and roster depth are better than
one. But right now, those specific two, I'd go with Johnson. Right? I would.
No socks?
I've never been a big Andre Johnson fan.
Okay.
I think Andre Johnson's a freak physically. He puts up some decent numbers. Is he better than what you have in the outside? Of course. But I'm not sure that – I don't think that Andre Johnson is worth – I don't think
that's assuming, you know, the draft pick was palatable. But, you know, in – just looking at those two players or Andre Johnson, I think I can make up for Connolly on the line, and I think right now I can make up for Arrington at slot corner.
And then the next question is going to be, who are you, and I know we discard these guys, there's going to be a receiver that's gone as well. So developmentally, you know, are we ready to throw in the towel on Dobson? Are we ready to throw in the towel on Boyce? Tompkins is a little bit different situation because there isn't a draft pick invested in him. But are we willing to because I think when you're talking about which players are going, you're going to include one of those depth wide receiver guys because if Johnson comes in, there's only so many receivers.
I'm okay with whoever the worst out of that group is going.
Okay.
I mean, I'd do it. I would take Johnson over those two guys. I think he would add an element to your offense that you don't have right now, which is, your two best receivers are, what, 5'10"? You don't have a bigger receiver other than Gronk, who's had trouble staying on the field because of
injuries. Well, Fell's a bigger guy, but he's yet to prove
himself. We don't
know
if he's going to make the team.
He's, what,
6'3"? Dobson's a bigger guy, too.
Yeah.
But he hasn't proven himself.
Is LaFell, you just said you don't know if LaFell's going to make the team. Is that...
Hey, look, I've been burned before by saying, all right, good, they brought in a free agent wide receiver, and they never make the team.
Donald Hayes.
Right, so I'm...
he made the team.
I'm not falling into the...
Doug Gabriel.
Yeah,
right.
He's no
he
lock.
He made the team.
He's not a lock.
Right.
You know?
Last year, Austin Colley was in and out.
Right. Yeah. Austin Colley was your second most valuable receiver in the NCAA championship game.
Andrew also says...
So tell me, so that's what I'm saying. Andre Johnson would be a major upgrade.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care about developing the young guys.
Yeah. I was watching NFL Networks. This is also Andrew. Top 10 home field advantages. Mile High Stadium was number 2. And they were talking about how kickoffs, kicks, and punts all travel 3 to 4 yards farther because of the elevation. So that got me thinking, do you think that could have been a factor in Brady overthrowing Edelman in the championship game? Just a thought.
No, he missed a guy.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Let's see. Dan from New Zealand, I believe, NZ.
Let's go with it.
Okay. We'll throw you a quick game and question. Love the little mix with the show while the boys are away. Still can't get used to not hearing Andy make stupid comments after hearing the word sacks repeatedly over the last two shows. Anyway, here it is. All are based on the player or players being at their best year ever. Or so far, if current. Okay. Would you rather have Jerry Rice and Larry Fitzgerald or Randy Moss and Calvin Johnson?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Jerry
Rice. Irrelevant, but a good question.
I'd rather have Moss and Johnson. Easy.
Over Rice and who?
Larry Fitzgerald.
Ooh, I don't know, Fred.
It's a good question.
I go with Rice and Fitzgerald. Rice is the greatest receiver of all time.
I know, but here's the thing about Rice. He wasn't that fast.
How many times did he get caught from behind?
Never. Is he caught the ball with a 3-4 yard head start because of the precision of Joe Montana.
And somebody had an angle on him.
But I think I think Randy Moss and Calvin Johnson beat anybody.
No way. I take Fitzgerald and
okay, and that's a good one.
I think Rice. We're looking at Larry Fitzgerald and we're probably underselling him a little bit. Who's a terrific receiver, but in that group, he's the fourth guy, right? Yeah.
But I don't know what kind of effort I'm getting from Randy Moss game in and game out.
Well, he might be upset because Calvin Johnson's taking catches away from him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Barry Sanders and Stephen Ridley together, or Emmitt Smith and Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis. Sanders and Ridley, or Emmitt Smith and Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis. That's tougher. At first, I jumped at Sanders and Ridley, but then I'm thinking, boy, Green-Ellis and Emmitt Smith. Yeah, durability longevity. I mean, Emmitt Smith played on a broken ankle.
Shoulder. His shoulder was falling out one game in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's, he's incredible.
And Benny's probably not a lock in Cincinnati this year, or he probably faces some competition for the first time.
But reliable.
He's had a pretty good little career for an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
And the thing about Barry Sanders and... as great as he is, had a lot of negative plays.
Yep, he did.
A lot of negative plays.
And so he'd break the big one.
And I love Emmitt, so I'm going Emmitt. Although he did stiff me in Arizona. He was in Arizona, and I was covering the Cardinals locker room after the Patriots beat them. And I'm standing there waiting to talk to him with, you know, not just me. There was probably six or seven guys. And his locker was right next to the exit door that went right outside. And we're sitting there, and he's putting his suit on with his back to the media. And just, like, pulls up his tie and boom, right out the door. Didn't even turn around.
Pro move. Steve Young or Tom Brady? Well, that's not even close.
I don't think so.
That's not even close.
Brady.
Yeah. Deion Sanders or Darrell Revis?
It's close. What do you mean it's not close? He's in the Hall of Fame.
I don't care.
Well, so the other guy's in the Hall of Fame.
I don't care.
Too.
No, I know, but he was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Who'd you say the second one?
Short little passes.
It's Sanders.
Sanders or Revis? I think Sanders because of the kick return game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Revis has been terrific, but for a far shorter period of time.
Yeah,
so
Sanders.
Far.
Deion Sanders was unbelievable.
Correct.
I have no time for him now with all the nonsense, and he wants to be involved in everything from every angle. But when he was a player, every time he touched the ball, it was like, you could see where either he was going to take it or could have. And then when he was on defense, he was like glue. He was incredible.
Yeah, but he couldn't tackle. That's what people used to like to
say. Yeah, I'll take that.
Who cares? He doesn't have to.
I'll take it. And final question from Dan. From the top 10 of the first round 2014 draft, which player do you think will be the biggest letdown, but if the Patriots were given the hypothetical opportunity to sign him next year, could be a better player in our system? I don't have the list in front of me. I haven't memorized the 2014 draft, so
I haven't a clue.
Yeah. Let's see. Jack from South Carolina. Love the show. I've seen a lot of depth chart projections recently, and I keep seeing everyone have Collins as the strong side back or Mayo on the weak side. I think we read this before. We corrected Jack, letting him know that at least in camp so far, Mayo's been in the middle. So that kind of makes his whole email.
Where did Hightower play at Alabama? Inside or outside?
I think he played more outside, didn't he?
I thought he did play more outside. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a – I wouldn't be surprised to see Hightower in passing situations. Maybe even with his hand on the on the field or something like that. I think you're going to see him used – another guy – not to the exact extent with Arrington, but I think there's some similarities there that Hightower was played out of position, especially last year, and I think he got a bad rap about that. The bust word came out from a lot of different people. Put him in his normal situation, now in his third year. I think you're going to see them try to be a little bit more exotic with him and have him do some different things.
You know what my issue watching him over the first 2 years of his career sometimes was his motor. That was the issue I thought I saw with him sometimes, just not playing to the whistle all the time. Now, there could be plays where he was kind of out of the play, but so what? Play. Keep going. You never know what's going to happen. And but I thought the last four or five games of last year that he played his best football here. So maybe that's a good sign.
Yep. Junior from Dorchester, I was just hoping you could clarify something for me. Do you guys really disagree with the Sam Munson article about how Brady is no longer in the top tier of quarterbacks? Because I've heard you rip him constantly on the show, saying it's stupid to think Brady's not a top five quarterback. But then right after, very quickly and not as loud, you mention how he never wrote that, and it's really ESPN's fault. So who are you ripping, ESPN or Sam Munson or maybe both? I'm not familiar. Maybe that was a show. I think I wasn't here when Sam
conveniently.
When Sam called,
I had to criticize Brady. I was out that day.
No. I'm always here. But when Sam called in, I wasn't here for that show, and I don't know if what Sam was specifically saying took Brady out of the top tier of where that was ESPN's spin on it. I'm not sure. So
the only thing I've seen from Brady in the last 2 years or so that I never saw prior to that was him tucking the ball and ducking in the pocket, which he never used to do. So whether that's an issue with his trust with the protection or certain plays where he knows he's got to get it out quickly and it wasn't there, the defense maybe made an adjustment, something has affected him that he now, maybe it's just self-preservation since he got hurt, but I never used to see him just kind of tuck the ball and duck Tony Eason style. And he's done that the last couple of years. That's the only thing I would say about him negative.
I think his pocket awareness has been better now than it used to be when he was young. And once in a while...
Based on what?
Once in a while, his instincts, you know, tell him there's somebody there and there's not. But I think I've seen him do some...
And those would not be instincts.
Well, whatever they are. Sometimes your instincts are wrong.
I mean, I've seen him. He's had great instincts. But I'm just saying... I just
everybody looks at that one time where he shrugged and went down and nobody was there, and it was like, oh my God, he has no pocket awareness anymore. It's unbelievable how people take one or two plays and extrapolate that over a whole season.
That's not what I'm saying.
Right. I'm with Brian on this one. I think you've seen him, you see those phantom people in the pocket that he sort of shrugs and ducks and things like that. He's done that more over the last
couple
years.
Talking about the phantom ones. I'm talking about he does it knowing he's going to get hit, where he didn't used to do that. He'd stay in there, and whether he had to make a throw and take the hit, which he still does. I mean, I don't want to take that. But he never used to tuck the ball and duck. And he does that sometimes.
Did he used to throw the ball as much as he does now?
Since year two.
Yeah, okay.
2002, they came out and threw the ball on every down.
Oh, baloney.
What?
Baloney.
You gonna make me look this up?
He didn't start putting up the monster numbers until 2006.
2006 was when things started to tip. Yeah. And in order for them to get back, I think to where they need to be with the roster that it's currently constituted, there should be less of a reliance on him in the passing game.
In 2002, he had 601 pass attempts. He didn't have as many again until 2011. He didn't throw it 600 times in 2007. He threw it 601 times in 2002.
How much of that was a result of what the score was?
They came out in week one running the spread formation that season.
Yeah.
And then they got exposed three games into the year because they couldn't stop the run.
And when you go in week one, spread formation on first down, you're not going to get the pressure you are when it's third and five and they know you have to pass. It's you have to watch the games, Brian, and
I'm
really surprised.
They threw the ball over the lot in 2001,
and I'm really disappointed because I thought you were paying more attention when you were working for Patriots Football Weekly. I'm disappointed.
Fred, are you denying that in 2002 they threw the ball all over the place?
Yeah, but it wasn't the same situational passing that they have now. They really didn't
more
have
by
it.
It's by design now.
It was by design in 2002.
Okay. Yeah.
Check out some of the scores. What was a Tennessee score third to last week from the year?
How about we check out first half statistics from those seasons, from that season? Because there's no situational passing. You're coming out. They threw the ball all over the place in 2002. Trust me.
I know, but if you're passing.
Not because they were behind, Fred.
But when you have the run that they have to still defend, it's easier to do that with less pressure. When they're always gearing up for the quarterback on every down.
Right.
And they're not really defending the run. Then you're going to get hit more. Your quarterback's going to get hit more. Back then, Brady wasn't under the pressure that he is now. It wasn't all about Tom Brady. They still had to worry about, you know, the running game.
If after the first three games of the season they still were worrying about the running game, then they weren't watching tape.
I'm telling you that it's all about – it became all about Tom Brady. And, you know, that's tough to do. You know, unless you have, you know, an amazing offensive line.
He threw the ball 43 times in week one, a 30-14 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, they threw the ball. Just accept it. They threw the ball a ton in 2002. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, I'm telling you, you know, did he have the same pressure around him back then than he does now?
I mean, they had Antoine Smith was the running back.
Yeah.
He got sacked 31 times that year.
You know,
40 last year.
So what I'm saying is, the pressure was not the same around Tom Brady's body than it was.
Tom Brady was 23 then.
You can attribute that to a better offensive line or whatever you want to do.
If Tom was sitting here and he said, listen, there are times right now where I feel like that's better for the team, for the long-term health, for me, and therefore the team. So sometimes I tuck the ball and just accept that I'm going to get sacked.
Right.
That's okay. I would accept that answer.
You were covering the team in 2002. Do you ever remember having a conversation about the pressure on Tom Brady being too much? Ever.
Yes.
Oh, please.
Come on.
Come on.
I remember talking about the fact that they were throwing the ball way too much.
But that's the difference.
And what happens when you throw the ball way too much?
That's different, though. That's different than what I just asked you.
When you're not running the football, teams come after you and game plan to bring pressure.
Right. But and they surprised a lot of teams. I mean, they surprised us, I remember.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Right?
They came out of the gate throwing it with a second-year guy who didn't throw the ball hardly at all
right.
the year before.
So, but I'm telling you that, you know, until a passing game starts really beating you, you know, teams are still going to have to look at the run. And it wasn't until 2006 that this team was totally reliant on passing. You know,
we'll agree to disagree.
They also had a defense that got teams off the – that got
they
them off
the somebody else to field.
That's off
true.
Them on the, you know, third down. It was just a more well-rounded team.
There's no question. They won three Super Bowls. I mean, the 2003 and the 2004 team, to me, is the best of the bunch. I mean, Corey Dillon running the ball. They didn't have that. I mean, they had a guy who could kill the clock at the end of games where they didn't need to throw the ball to make first downs.
You know, and you just have to be fair about Brady's pocket awareness. Yeah, I mean, he's had some phantom moves over the last few years, but we've also seen him done some amazing things to avoid pressure.
Fred, no one – see, this is what happens when you talk about Tom Brady. Just because you say something isn't perfect doesn't mean he's not great.
I know, but people use this as a sign that, see, he's not as good as he used to be.
It's amazing to me the traction that guy's piece not only received.
I didn't read it, but
emailers are still asking questions about that.
It won't die.
2 months after the fact.
It won't die.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And sadly, the only thing that will probably quell that, he's got to win it again.
Right.
He's got to win it again.
Which he doesn't have to win it again.
But for the people, right. the naysayers
for these,
out
for,
there.
For the naysayers.
For the naysayers out there, it's nobody's ever won a Super Bowl at that age. His play has diminished. His skills are eroding.
How old was Elway?
Probably 37.
Yeah. I mean, listen, is it okay to not be as good at 37 as you were at 32?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so what's the big deal?
But
he might not be as good as he used to be. That doesn't. But he was as great as anybody that ever played the game.
Nobody was
years ago.
Nobody was a bigger Denver fan back in the
Elway days
back then. And I, even as a fan, I could see Elway decline.
Do you still have your Elway jersey?
Sure, I do. It doesn't fit anymore.
Didn't fit the last time you wore it.
As a fan, I was thank God for Terrell Davis. You know, I could see Elway's but. I don't see it as much with Brady. It's so minuscule that it's not even worth talking about. And whatever reason,
it's okay.
It might be his conditioning, it might be the TB12 system, whatever the reason, everybody doesn't decline on the same rate as other people.
I don't think I'm certainly not saying that he fell off the table.
You know, Eric is like, it's a fact that the older you get, the more you're going to decline. Well, no, because he was better at 28 than he was 22.
Right.
So age will eventually become a factor.
Okay, so if Eric said that and you took it literally, then yeah, you're right. But can you be as good at 37 as you were at 30 in this league?
I think so.
I think you can be
at quarterback.
You can be smarter, but I mean, when you lose the ability to, one of his strengths, it was not, he was never a runner. Okay. We can all admit that. He was never a guy who ran, but he was very good at moving in the pocket.
And I think he still is.
I think he is too. But is he as good? Is it okay to say he's not as good at 37 as he was at 32?
I think maybe he's not as good. But I don't think it makes a difference in winning or losing.
It doesn't. I agree with you.
And
there's no other quarterback I'd rather have.
But here's what he's going to say. And this is, again, this is coming from the sixth round pick, 199. Everybody told him he can't play. Now everybody's telling him you can't win or you can't perform at 37. And I think he wears that like a badge of honor. Okay. Keep telling me that.
Whatever he needs.
Keep telling me that.
Right? Whatever he needs.
And I guess
I don't think he needs motivation, but if it gives it to him,
I think he needs motivation. I mean,
I think he's pretty self motivated, but
I think that helps, don't you? At 37 and all the money and accolades and championships that he's won, he needs something to help get him up in March. And if this will do it, great.
Well, you know, I know it's become a little bit of a cliche with him when they say which Super Bowl is the best, and he always says the next one. But I really believe that once he tasted it, you know how you talk about guys, well, he's won. Is he still hungry? You know, you don't know if he's still got it in him, blah, blah, blah. Tom Brady, I really believe that every year that they're not in the Super Bowl kills him because he's tasted.
Right.
Especially when he's that close. He's a game away the last 2 years.
They have the ultimate competitive drive. Everything's a competition, whether it's ping pong, playing cards, or playing football. Everything's a competition.
I mean, I feel that way. I feel like if we're not in the Super Bowl, it's like, what?
Right.
We belong in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Is that arrogance? I don't
know. Yes, yeah. Very much so. That's why people hate Patriots fans.
But
you're the poster child.
I really feel like, I'm not saying we deserve it or anything like that.
It's not a birthright.
You got to get that. I agree with that. Believe me, I agree with that more so than anybody. I think people take it for granted are ridiculous.
So you're putting yourself in that category.
I'm not, though.
But here's what maybe this will help educate Patriot fans. It isn't a birthright. It's really hard to do.
I say it all the time.
And there's really smart, really talented people out there that are working as hard as you guys are working and everything like that. And to get there is a tremendous accomplishment. And maybe through the passage of time and seeing what goes on, maybe then people will appreciate what this team has been able to do.
Matt, I say that all the time. I'm not trying to say that I think it's a birthright. I'm just so disappointed when we don't go because I've been there, and I love it, and I want to go back.
Well, also because they...
But I know how hard it is.
They keep our interest by being competitive every year.
And
if we started out this year and right off the gate, oh, boy, this team doesn't have it. By December, we're kind of conditioned, but we're in it every year, and we can see we're a play or two away every year.
Which goes back to Matt's point. That we should be appreciative that we have a chance.
It's really
every
hard.
Year.
It's amazingly hard to do what they're doing.
In the last 3 years, just to wrap that up, they've been one game away. Either one game away from winning it in the Super Bowl or one game away in the AFC Championship game from advancing to the Super Bowl.
And so,
it's tantalizing.
It is tantalizing. All right, food's here. We're going to take a break. It's about 1 o'clock. A lot more emails coming in. All subjects. We'll get to them right after this.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights, track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company. One that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. PFW in Progress presents Car Shopping with Fred Kirsch.
You know, when I first got married, my wife's car, she had a Subaru Outback, okay? The woman across the street comes over and says, oh, you have a Subaru Outback. That's a lesbian car. And I'm up pruning the tree. I'm like, who asked you?
Never question the boss when it comes to cars.
Did you say that? Yeah, I said that to her. Who asked you? But my point is, who cares? If lesbians have adopted the Subaru Outback, but I like a Subaru Outback, I don't care.
Because there's
only people like you that have hang-ups.
No.
Have a hang-up.
Nobody will ever tell Fred Kirsch or his wife what to drive. Now back to PFW in Progress.
All right, back here in PFW in Progress. Matt Smith, executive producer of Craft Sports Group, is here. It's Craft Sports Productions, otherwise known as No Socks. Brian Moore, executive director of the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon.
It's
ED Day here on Patriots PFW in Progress.
Got the big dogs.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are big dogs.
Well, you're a big dog.
I'm just a little puppy, Fred.
In charge of the hall.
We're just pinch hitters in life right here, right, Brian?
That's right.
As Parcells would say.
This is my role right here.
I'm just a gear in the machine.
Right.
You know?
I'm a fill-in.
Earlier we were talking about hall induction, and Chris Ferreira says, if we're going by head coaches bringing the Patriots to a Super Bowl for hall induction, then Raymond Berry needs to be considered as much as Bill Parcells. Well, I don't know. We were really talking about bringing credibility to the organization. So,
yeah, and listen, like I said, I think that Parcells did that, but that's just a piece of the puzzle. And the credibility came with what he did somewhere else. So I just don't put as much weight in that as far as Hall of Fame consideration as other people seem to. Like you.
All right. Bill from the Big Island of Hawaii calling in. He says, we often hear about projecting players' futures. I have no data, but I have a question. What percentage of players who were suspended once for PED end up getting suspended again? Also, same question for substance abuse. What percentage of players who get suspended for substance abuse get suspended again? Seems like a very important thing to know and to include in any player projection. For the Patriots, we have Browner, and the Seahawks did not seem to try hard to keep him. Do we have any other players with PED or substance abuse suspension histories? Love the show. I have Patriots football daily, too. Mahalo. Bill.
Right. I can't recall a lot of guys that have been suspended the second time. Because the second time is
it's a whole season, right?
Right. There's been one or two but I can't remember who.
Well, Josh Gordon is Cleveland.
And he's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Is his substance abuse or is it PEDs?
No, I think his is substance abuse.
It's substance abuse. So it's a little bit different timeline for substance. First time you get put in the program. Second time I think you get 4 games. And then third time I think you get a season. With PEDs it's different. First time is 4 games. Second time is a season.
How many Patriots have been suspended?
Well, just off the top of my head, I can think of two. One of them wasn't by the league. I don't think Kevin Falk was suspended by the league. Was he? He was suspended by the team.
That was for having the joint in his bag.
Pocket.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So going into the concert.
That was different. Rodney Harrison got caught with a FedEx package.
Yep. Same one that Robert Parrish, I think, had. The same FedEx package.
Right. I think, was it
Mike Cloud?
No, was it?
Was suspended when they signed him, just like Browner.
Wasn't our running back Bolden suspended?
He was.
Yeah, Bolden was suspended.
Spikes?
Spikes was suspended.
Spikes was suspended. Yeah. So none of them, you know, we were obviously haven't been caught again.
But even across the league, I can't think of a lot of guys that have been caught a second time.
Yeah.
And Browner was PEDs?
Yes.
Yeah. So all of them are, you know, on the hook. If they get caught or if they use it again and get caught, will be a whole season. So I guess it's a low percentage of guys that get that season.
Very guess they low. Weren't using the Wizinator.
Wow.
Let's back to Browner for a second. When one of the earlier emailers was talking about the hypothetical with the Patriots and the Broncos, Broncos are at midfield, and he automatically put Revis on Demaryius Thomas. If Browner's healthy, just from a physical standpoint, is Browner maybe a better matchup with Demaryius Thomas there?
Bigger guy.
Long arms and everything like that, potentially. Right. Just before we – I know we're penciling in guys and positions and everything before they've, you know, taken the balls out of the bags for training camp. But just a thought when you're doing that, that maybe from a physical standpoint, Browner might be your better guy there.
Just a thought.
Although if Revis plays the way he has through the prime of his career, put him on anybody you want.
But is Revis a side of the field guy, or is he, I'm going to lock down this guy? Or is he both? You know, some guys are, put him on the left side, and he's just going to take the whoever's on the left side and shut that side of the field down. There's a difference there, I think.
There is a difference. I think he's a shutdown guy. Wherever you go, if he wants to follow you, he'll follow you. I mean, they used Talib that way last year, which is, I think, a little bit unusual for this defense to really do that with a guy. But they definitely did it with him last year. Ty Law used to lobby to do it all the time, and they didn't always do it. He always wanted the other guys, the other team's best guy.
Michelle, who loves it when I call her Shalada, writes in, what about releasing Mallett? I feel like he's wasting a roster spot. It's not like he's going to take us to the promised land if, God forbid, Brady goes down. Keep an extra weapon for Brady instead, and if Garoppolo has to play, so be it. Let the chips fall where they may. Well, I mean, that's fine. They might end up doing that. But before we were having a discussion about freeing up cap space, I don't think Mallett frees you up a lot. He's still on his rookie contract.
But he's over a million, I want to say.
Yeah.
Look.
So, you know, I don't think that would really solve a lot of problems. But they might end up doing that anyway, you know.
You would say right now in July they would not feel comfortable that they're going into the season with three quarterbacks, don't you think?
I think right now they are.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, luck can change between now and the end of preseason.
Sure.
Ryan Mallett is $777,000.
Yeah, so it's peanuts, really. Mike in Pensacola.
That's his base, I think.
Oh.
One second.
He probably has a million when the roster bonus.
937, yeah.
So there
you
go. Mike writes in, given the current personnel that we have on the team and assuming that we keep four safeties on the 53-man roster, who would be your four? Also, what have been your first impressions of Jamea Thomas? Is it possible he could make the team, as he seems to be a physical player and is competitive in the slot? I saw collegiate highlights of him covering receivers Sammy Watkins and Benjamin from FSU, and he seemed to hold his own. Finally, who has the better chance in your mind to be the kickoff returner this year, Roy Finch or Jeremy Gallen? Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Neither.
Yeah, I don't think neither. And in terms of Jamea Thomas, it's hard. Again, we've seen these guys in sweatshirts without even numbers,
right.
No pads. You know, call us in August and we'll give you a little bit better idea.
So let's do a little safety tutorial. It's McCourty and Harmon.
Yeah.
And Tavon Wilson and Nate Ebner.
I guess Ebner is slotted as a safety. Yeah.
Patrick Chung.
Patrick
right.
Chung.
Yeah. If Chung didn't make the team, I don't think anybody would be surprised, right? So is Chung going to take a job away from either Ebner or Wilson?
Thing about Ebner is his special teams play, and you need those guys too.
Right.
I mean, Wilson could be very much on the bubble.
Right. I thought it was telling that Wilson was out with those guys in Arizona,
yeah.
To be quite honest with you. And so maybe the light's gone off in his head that I've got to do more. This is a crossroads type of a year for me, and I've got to do everything I can to try to stick with this team. He's been wholly unimpressive for his first 2 years.
Tony writes in, Fred, I wouldn't worry too much. You're right about Brady. Brian's credibility is still wanting after Tuesday's show when near the end he has to ask who plays on the offensive line. Then he says it hasn't been a problem. The offensive line was at best subpar. Mankins, Wendell, and Connolly did not play well at all. Fred, you win. So there you go.
Mankins did not have his best season. But Mankins is terrific.
Yeah, but you said they were fine, and then you asked, well, who plays on it?
So. I just couldn't come up with Solder. I forgot Solder's name. I said the 6'8 guy.
let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline. Juan's in Florida. Hey, Juan.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good. Are you in Miami at all, or are you north of what?
Daytona.
Daytona.
Yeah, Daytona Beach.
Okay. So do you care about LeBron James?
Nah, not really.
Like the rest of the state. There's too many other things to do.
Yeah. going back on talking about Brady's decline and people saying he's not a top five quarterback, you guys are familiar with the Top 100 show?
Yeah, although I don't watch it.
Yeah, and these are NFL players that rank the players, and they're the ones that know the players more than what we do because they play against them. And Brady was ranked number 3 and second best quarterback of last year.
Well, look, I wouldn't put much stock in that list if they had ranked Brady 10. I'm not going to do the same just because he's 3. You're right. Players know the guys they play against a little bit better, but as an NFL player, you don't play against Brady every year. You know, only a certain amount of teams do. So a lot of that is reputation, just the way the Pro Bowl voting is by the players. So,
and there's some question as to do the NFL players actually vote on that. I was reading a piece earlier this week where some people were actually wondering, I didn't get a ballot. You know, what are they talking about? You know, how is this selected? And there are players who were clearly upset about where their position was or wasn't, and they're saying, I talked to some of my teammates. They're not really sure who's voting on this. Okay. So,
yeah. If I was a player, I wouldn't pay any attention to it.
No.
I'd like to think I wouldn't.
I pay more attention to my Madden rating than I do that.
That's it, guys.
All right, Juan, thanks for calling in.
I don't know why any player other than ego would ever listen to sports radio, read the papers.
Well, I mean, ego is huge, though.
I mean, it's just...
You say other than ego, that drives a lot of the guys to do anything.
I guess.
So Manning was 1, Brady was 3. Sorry for my ignorance. Who is 2?
Probably Rodgers, I believe. Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no credibility. I don't know.
You know, so... But look, you know, in today's game, you can make a case that, oh, if I was starting a team today, I'd want Russell Wilson or Colin Kaepernick. Now, I think Wilson, because they can run the ball. Right. And you have to have that element, you know, to keep defenses on their heels that the, you know, the quarterback could leave the pocket if he had to.
Calvin Johnson was 2.
Okay. That's fair.
Thank you.
Peyton Manning, Calvin Johnson, Tom Brady, Adrian Peterson, LeSean McCoy, Drew Brees, Richard Sherman, Jamal Charles, A.J. Green, Jimmy
Graham.
Richard Sherman
being that high up there. This is all popularity, you know?
Aaron Rodgers was 11.
Yeah.
Followed by J.J. Watt.
Chris with a T-I-A-N is on the line. Hey, Christian.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
How you doing?
Oh, what a nice week. No shouting, no fighting, no burping. This is great.
Well, we had a little bit of shouting, but that's, you know, not too much.
No, I'm just kidding. You guys are doing a great job.
The fill-ins.
The fill-ins.
So, you know what? That's not a bad name. Fred and the fill-ins.
The replacements.
That is good. The replacements.
The replacements. I wanted to talk about the offense, and you guys had given a lot of discussions of the defense early on, and I think for the offense this year, I'm excited because at this time last year, you know, bam, you know, they get the rug pulled out from under them with Hernandez, and there goes a piece of their offense. You flash forward to week 1, Amendola gets hurt after the Buffalo game, and you lose Vereen for 10 weeks. Bam. Week 2, your offense is a shell of itself. Maybe they were expecting Gronk back a little earlier than he was, but, you know, for a team that's, you know, pretty regimented and pretty consistent and having their guys in the right spots to make the plays, you had a bunch of rookies in there. And, you know, they tread water for a little bit. When Gronk came back, the offense was fantastic. Okay, that was even with Overeem. The offense was phenomenal. So now you get a whole offseason. I don't know where LaFell fits into this, but, you know, health-wise, with Vereen and Amendola, and you really got Edelman now in the system, I feel pretty good, and I'm excited to see, and also with Gronk. You know, hopefully Gronk is there from week 1.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, that's huge. I mean, that's huge.
You're right. And, again, I'm going to say, you know, I'm not going to get too excited because I've seen other free agent wide receivers come in here. But if LaFell can produce, well, that changes everything because he's not really on a lot of people's radar.
He's not, and I hope he's the beneficiary of the Edelmans and the Amendolas,
right?
You know, creating space. And, you know, I think he's going to make the team. I think he had a pretty good signing bonus, so I don't think he's a guy that's going to be cuttable.
Well, I've said that before.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like $3-4 million that they guaranteed him.
Yeah.
So I think they're pretty confident he's going to make the team.
Fred, what do you make of this talk that's happened sort of since the end of the OTAs and LaFell as the move tight end? kind of a project. Do you think there's anything to it?
He's about 6'3". He's pretty skinny, though, right? I don't know. I mean, I think people just looked at his height and said, okay, you know, let's do that. But, yeah, I could see it happening, absolutely. I rule nothing out with, Josh McDaniels and Belichick.
Don't you think, though, rather than try to force something that isn't there and this, you know, the two tight end offense was great while it was here, but one of those guys isn't here, and who knows about the other guy? Don't you think that they've really tried to assemble this roster in a little bit of a different way? And I think the look that to me was the most interesting during the OTAs is when they had the kid from Wisconsin out in the field at the same time that Vereen was on the field. And maybe that's a different way. The game is to try to create mismatches, and let's see if we can create a mismatch by putting both those guys on the field at the same point in time and get them into space.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe.
And you see a lot of that, during those mini camps in early days of training camp. You see guys playing in positions that you didn't expect them to, just to get it on tape, just to see how they look out there, how comfortable they are.
And as we saw with Troy Brown back in 2004,
right.
It was week 9 or 10 or whatever week it was, we saw him play some defensive back in training camp and kind of laughed it off. And there he was,
right?
9 weeks later or whatever week, and he was out there doing it. So they might be just getting a look at something that they may not use until the second half of the season out of necessity.
Right.
Fred, just an observation here. But have you noticed with Brian that every reference to the team is...
He's brought up Troy Brown about 10 times already.
Do you think he knows 20 guys on the team on the current roster?
20?
Yeah, Jackie was here on Tuesday, and she's like, yeah, I felt a little uncomfortable when you guys talk about 2004 and 2003. I go, well, that's Brian's sweet spot.
Right.
It is. Brian, great job on the hall. I just want to let you know, I think it's a fantastic case for any fan. There's also been sort of a groundswell of movement that perhaps you would replace Eric. I like Eric, so personally I wouldn't replace him, you know. I mean, I like Eric. I think he brings a lot to the show, but there are some people that will prefer you over him.
Well, I think it's just a matter of time before in one of his vacations he meets someone overseas and never returns. Or gets eaten by a lion, you know, one or the other.
Yeah,
gets taken hostage in North Korea.
Could be. Would we negotiate for him? I don't think so.
No way.
Hashtag save Eric.
Yeah. With a K.
Thank God.
All right, Christian. Thank you. Speaking of Eric, Josh from Waterloo, Iowa says... Yeah, he says, does Eric think it's a good idea to tank this year like the Colts did and try to get a number one pick so we can replace Brady? It's kind of tongue-in-cheek there. So, but Eric is the one that said 3 or 4 years ago that the window was closed on the Patriots, and they proceeded to get into the Super Bowl in 2011. And,
again, I don't buy into windows.
You know,
you try to win every year. There's no window.
Of course. But Eric is...
You don't make personnel decisions.
He's a little bit
because
doomsday.
Of a window.
He's a little bit doomsday.
I don't think. I'm probably in the minority on that.
Let's see, Tony, it's a virtual certainty that the secondary will be improved, but Fred, as an eternal optimist, please tell me, a sometime pessimist, how the wide receiver core has improved. Dobson coming off the crucial first-year offseason spent in a boot, Amendola a question mark, Tompkins perhaps even a greater question, Boyce coming off a mere 14-catch season, apart from Edelman, who's had one great season out of four in a passing league. Where are the difference makers? Where are the difference makers? Well, I'll tell you right now, number one, a healthy Gronk on week one. And again, I don't know that for certain, but that would be a difference.
So no, that's not there.
That's a difference maker. That's an improvement right now over last year.
Well, I'm going to parse words with the emailer and say, I think it's going to be difficult for him and for Edelman to replicate what he did last year. And if they're throwing as much to Edelman as they did last year, then I think the offense is...
Right.
That's a problem. But I'm not suggesting that Dobson is going to go from whatever his rookie stats were, which, by the way, if you look at him in comparison to what other receivers did in their rookie year, his numbers were pretty good. But if he just improves a little bit, you don't think Boyce is going to improve a little bit?
Right.
He's going to be on the field more?
Boyce might have only had 14 catches, but when he was in – I mean, he did some things with the ball.
There's your kick returner
for
2014. You don't think that Amendola is going to be on the field more? I'm not saying that Amendola is going to play 16 games, but you don't think Amendola is going to be a better player than he was last year? So if those guys just improve by a little bit, you know, I think that is improvement. And then if you can get the difference maker on the field for
right.
more time.
And if, if LaFell can contribute
right.
based on what they paid him,
right.
I think now you're better than you were last year.
Right.
LaFell had numbers that were a little bit better than Dobson's last year, and it was his best season. He had 49 catches and 5 touchdowns. Dobson had 37 catches and 4 touchdowns.
Right.
So if Dobson improves, but again, he's been in a boot the whole offseason.
Right. That's not good. That's not good.
Do we know what the injury is?
I won't argue with Tony there. I mean, Dobson is, again, behind the eight ball.
Correct. Yeah. But and let's go back last year. When Dobson was drafted and he came in here for OTAs, it was pretty well publicized at the time that he came to OTAs out of shape. And the coaching staff was not happy with him. And I think there were some words said, like, when the OTAs were over, you better get it right and come back here ready to go. And he did. He came back. When training camp started, Dobson impressed a lot of people as far as training camp is concerned, and I think that got him where he was able to buy some trust and relationship with TB12 to get him over the hump during that period, you know, before Gronkowski came back on the field.
You know, one thing I saw from him last year that I thought he had a tough time doing or adjusting to is the back shoulder catch.
Yeah.
You know, and those are that's a read, obviously.
That whole fade thing?
He's a rookie.
Yeah, but it's not that hard, is it?
Well, I mean,
I don't know. I'm not a wide receiver.
It's the timing. It's knowing right. when to let up and then come back.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It is a turn back, right?
Yeah, but when do you turn back?
When the ball gets there?
It's probably not as easy as we're saying.
I'm right. sure, but I've seen plenty of people do it around the league.
It's an incredibly hard ball to defend.
Right.
Of course it is.
Right. So that,
so he has the advantage.
So that tells you right there that there's probably something to it that makes it hard to defend.
You want to talk about frustration about that. I couldn't it was surprising to me that on a play that had very little success on last year that they kept calling that play all the time. I mean, clearly he wasn't understanding or there was a disconnect between him and the quarterback on how to do that. Yet rather than sit there and say, boy, this isn't working, let's try something else, they kept going at that.
Yeah.
Well, there's no question it's a hard play to defend because you're running stride for stride with a guy and you're not looking back, and all right. of a sudden he twists back. I mean, the defensive back has a hard time doing that.
Right. Josh writes in, I often think about this. Say it's back during the 2007 perfect season and somehow you have in your possession a DVD of the Super Bowl, 47? Where they lose to the Giants. You know that if history goes as planned, 42? I'm sorry. So now I'm off. All right, let's start again. Say it's back during the 2007 perfect
smooth
season.
Smooth like sandpaper.
And somehow you have in your possession a DVD of Super Bowl 42 where they lose to the Giants. You know that if history goes as planned, they will have a perfect season only to lose it at the Super Bowl. So knowing they will lose, would you show the DVD to Bill Belichick? Would you try to alter history? Would the win still be as sweet, and would Bill even accept it? I often wonder all of this, just kind of interesting to think of. So,
person's got some free time.
Yeah, I'm not really exactly sure.
Think about that.
So by showing Bill the DVD, somehow he
of
can
the
make,
loss?
Yeah.
In the Super Bowl?
You have a DVD of the Super Bowl where they lose to the Giants.
So he can max protect all day?
Oh, but by showing him the DVD, you're going to disrupt history and they won't have the perfect season. Well, if that means they can win the Super Bowl, I show him the DVD, right? I'd rather have a Super Bowl win than a perfect season.
Of course.
Right. So,
but is he saying they were undefeated and you're going to show... when are we showing him the DVD?
Yeah, you're going to have, Josh, you're going to have to email back or call or something to explain that one. I think there's something there, but I just don't think we understand what it is. Let's see. Dylan from South Florida, I want to get your thoughts on camp so far and the first couple of real games coming up. Score predictions, and will you be in Miami week one? I'm going to try to go again like I did in 2012. I'll be there. It's too early for score predictions and all that. And camps, forget about camps. Camp starts in 2 weeks.
From today.
Yeah.
From today.
Be sure to stop at the hall when you're down here visiting practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hall's a great open. Take.
Yeah.
Presented by Raytheon.
And I hear it's free, right?
It is not
oh,
free.
Oh, it's not free.
We will be handing out hall bucks out at the fan zone, though, so you can get a discount.
Okay, good. Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline. Brian's in New Brunswick. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I just want to call in to clarify the cornerback discussion you guys were having earlier. Browner stays on one side always. When he was in Seattle, he and Sherman didn't flip at all. But Revis does move around. So I think it's pretty conceivable where you can see Revis covering a slot guy and Browner and Dennard on the field at the same time.
We saw Revis cover Welker here.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in the day. So that certainly isn't that wouldn't be a surprise.
No, and I think it'll make a lot of fans happy if Kyle Arrington isn't on the field. But, hey, he's our whipping boy, right?
It's
not Fred's.
I think every
Fred's
team,
wearing a Kyle Arrington jersey.
Every
right
team
now.
Has that one guy in the defensive backfield that all the fans, you know, seem to be on. You know, and it's really hard to have good quality depth through your defensive backfield in this league. It really is. You know, Seattle seemed to be able to do it last year, but it's tough.
Seattle had a great defense,
yeah,
top to bottom.
I mean, they had like seven guys in the defensive line that they would rotate in and out. That, you know, they were always fresh throughout the game.
Very much so. So I got to ask, because it came up on Tuesday again, why is the discussion of Browner at safety still going on? I mean, he was a Pro Bowl corner. We need corners. Is it just a size thing?
I
think it's a need thing here, potentially.
Well,
there's
no
all.
Obvious partner for McCourty at this particular point in time. Like, I think people think that maybe Harmon is going to get into that role. No, there's been some media speculation that Logan Ryan, because of his ball skills, might get moved to that other position. So it's not like they've got Troy Polamalu at the other safety, and there's two definite guys.
Well, and McCourty, and
who else?
I don't think that they brought in Browner knowing he's going to miss the first four games because he's going to play safety. I think they have every intention of him being a corner.
No, I think you're right. And he said that in his first week here, or first day here, that he was a cornerback. I think the speculation comes with looking at what the team needs. You can pick another guy to play safety, but you essentially, with the current roster makeup, have two free safeties back there. So you don't have a physical presence, a guy that can come up and be the eighth guy in the box. Someone will do it.
Browner's tall, but is he physical?
He's been a physical guy.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you see, wasn't it Welker he laid out a couple years ago? Now, Welker was coming through the zone and ran right into him, and he killed him.
The other thing, caller, is maybe we're getting too caught up on positions here, and maybe we need to look at this. And Mike Reese does a great job of putting down, you know, percentage of times that the team's in nickel or in dime. And I don't think it's inconceivable to think that in passing situations, you're going to see Revis, Browner, McCourty, Ryan, Dennard, maybe Arrington, that's six defensive backs. Six cornerbacks, really,
right.
Because that's what McCourty came into right. the league as a cornerback. You could have six corners on the field at one particular point in time.
Right. Yep.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania. Fred, we all know how much of a homer you are, as I am also. But hypothetically speaking, who would have a better chance of going to the Super Bowl? Patriots with Peyton Manning or Denver with Tom Brady? Well, assuming that both Manning and Brady are playing at the top of their game, I think that if this...
Basically, he's asking you who's a better team, Denver or New England.
Well, right. And I'm saying if Patriots' defense is what I think they're going to be this year, I'd say maybe Manning with the Patriots. Because I think it's about the defense.
I don't know.
Yeah?
I don't know about that.
Okay. You think Brady...
I don't know. To be honest with you... I mean, I don't know enough about Denver's defense to make that call.
They were
call.
Good at times.
Right. Yeah. And so next year they're going to get back. Von Miller's going to be, you know, at least there's another PED guy, by the way, or a suspension guy. He's one strike away from getting some serious time off. DeMarcus Ware, injury problem, but as talented as anybody out there, if he's healthy, that certainly helps him. And they added the guy who blew out Gronkowski's knee in the secondary, T.J.
Right.
Ward. So they added some pieces defensively. I didn't think their defense was very good last year, but the Patriots were so inept offensively in the AFC Championship game, it made their defense look pretty good.
Mike writes in about season tickets. He's a season ticket holder. He said, did you know that it costs less to go to a preseason game this year? It cost me more to see the Raiders, Jets, and Bears, and Broncos in Foxborough. $147. Preseason is $57 each, and all the other games are $117. They reduced our preseason prices and added 30 to ticket prices for four games. Yes, I did know that.
Variable pricing. It's a league trend.
Yeah, a lot of teams are doing it.
Professional sports trend.
You know, I wasn't crazy about it. I thought that maybe we should just wait and see how other teams do it and not be one of the first teams to do it. But it is becoming a trend in the NFL to do that, variable pricing. So we'll see how it is. It's all about the secondary market, I guess. So fans feel like, you know, the value of those important games have, you know.
The guy I coach baseball with is a season ticket member, and he loves it.
He likes it.
He likes it. He said, now I can unload my preseason tickets. Maybe somebody will actually buy them.
Tremendous job using getting in season ticket member.
Thanks.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, he liked it.
I mean, they definitely had to do something about those preseason games. I mean, that's just, you know.
That's been a long time complaint.
Yeah.
And the league knows it. The teams know it, and the league knows it.
Yeah.
I remember right before the lockout season, Roger Goodell and Robert Kraft were in the Hall Theater, the Raytheon Theater over at the Hall, talking to fans, and that was a big question back then. That's 2010, and obviously it precedes that, but
I remember
they had to address it.
Right. I remember meeting the commissioner. He came to a league meeting. It was his first league meeting, and he was just going around talking to people at different clubs, and I happened to walk up to him with somebody else. He goes, well, where are you guys from? The Patriots. And what do you do? And he looked. He goes, oh, preseason. He goes, that's one of our biggest problems.
Yeah. Bill from Santa Monica writes in. And by the way, I took the walk all the way from, what's that crazy beach?
Venice.
Venice Beach, all the way to Santa Monica. And by the time we got to Santa Monica, it was like seeing, you know, a mirage, because Venice Beach is such a pit. It's like hell. You know, all the
never been. Is it that bad?
All the crazy people.
I think it's gotten a lot worse.
It's like, you know, bump city.
Is that where Fletch was rollerblading?
Yes. Yeah.
It's terrible. But then you get to Santa Monica, and it's like, thank God.
Right.
Had a
nice meal at Del Frisco's right there. So, anyway, Bill says all this talk of the defense being as good as 04. The question to me is, will they be as good as they were in the first six games of last year? To my eye, the first six games were won by the defense when the offense was Gronkless and had half an Amendola. Then they got Gronk back but lost Kelly, Wilfork, and Mayo, and the offense took over. Wouldn't having them all back put them over the top? That's the idea, Bill. The only problem with that, you know, extrapolation is in those first games, particularly the first four or five, they didn't play a quarterback.
I was just going to say the same thing. Remind me who the quarterbacks were again, and it was E.J. Manuel in his first game.
And he almost
Geno Smith in his first game, and he almost beat you. Andy Dalton, who was no great shakes at the time.
And they did beat us.
Right. But they only scored 13 points.
Right, right.
So it wasn't the murderer's row of quarterbacks that they were playing those first four or five weeks.
So that's the only problem. But look, numbers-wise, the defense was light years ahead of where they began 2012. 2013 start was light years ahead of 2012.
Right. Now, so, I would say this, looking at the schedule, sorry to interrupt you there, Fred, but while I think Tannehill is certainly in a different category, and I think playing in Miami in September, that's its own separate kettle of fish problems there. But Tannehill with a different center and a new offensive line, that's, again, you're not playing Aaron Rodgers and the Packers there. Remind me where they are. Week two is the mess that the Vikings are at quarterback. Is it Castle, Teddy Bridgewater? Who is it there? Week three is Oakland and Terrell Pryor or Matt Schaub or some other stiff.
Right.
You know? So once again, you're not starting with Rodgers, Manning.
And that's another reason why I think people aren't freaking out that Browner isn't going to be available the first four games.
Right.
You know? Chris from Hamilton, Ontario. I'm willing to say simply that, yes, the defense will be dominant. So long as the defense is healthy, it will be great. The concern about the front seven will only be the running game. So long as they can be middle of the pack for run defense, you will have the type of sack that people hate, coverage sacks. The median sack time it takes to have a defensive player reach the quarterback, has hovered between 2.7 and 2.8 seconds throughout the 2 years of the tracking. Unless a quarterback falls down or drops the ball, a sack of 1.7 seconds or less generally involves a rusher coming completely free. Revis takes one receiver out of the play. Browner and Dennard cover two other receivers. Browner a tight end. The safeties, that's what you were saying, Matt. The safeties can watch the quarterback eyes, and Jamie Collins can watch the running back. I predict the Patriots being top three in interceptions because of this.
Now, the second emailer, again with the dominant word, how about can we settle for better? How about let's get better defensively? And there's not a, that's not
better
a big
is 25th.
Bar, by the way. Right, better is 25th, you know? But wouldn't better at least be helpful? Let's start with better.
Yeah. Let's see. Another Chris writes in.
And the Patriots this year play all their best quarterback opponents in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Broncos, Colts, Lions, Packers, Chargers.
There you go. It's set up.
I mean,
Paul would say once again the Patriots get it all their way.
Early this season is Dolphins, Vikings, Raiders, Chiefs, Bengals, Bills, Jets, Bears, until you get to Denver.
Yeah.
Then it gets tough.
I think it's, don't
overlook that Bears. You know, that's
right.
That Bears team. Trestman's done a
nice
job there.
I'm not overlooking the team, but I don't like the quarterback.
I think the quarterback with those receivers
stretches. He has good games
with Brandon Marshall and the kid from South Carolina playing at wide receiver. That's a pretty
decent
combination.
And I think Cutler has grown up a little bit.
I agree.
You know, he's not the idiot he used to be.
I think he's an asshat.
That's his reputation, no doubt. But I think he's matured a little bit. You know, Chris in Boston. I've been reading a lot of good things from the media about Tompkins' performance in camp. He seems to have the playbook mastered, getting open and making nice catches. He apparently leaped over 6'4 Brandon Browner to make a great red zone grab on a fade route. That's true. This is encouraging because Tompkins can be a good playmaker on the outside for this team. I know you guys have bashed him for his double catching and overall awkwardness at times, but as long as he's beating his man and making plays when called upon, I could care less how it looks. How do you guys see it? Do you think Tompkins could be a David Givens, Jabbar Gaffney-type weapon on this team if he has improved from last year? Certainly if he's improved. And here's the thing about Tompkins. He did this last year in camp, too. Guys were hurt. He got extra reps, and he made the best of them. He really flashed in camp. Did the same thing during minicamp. Guys, you know, were a little bit hurt. Dobson wasn't out there. LaFell wasn't out there. He got extra reps, and he made the best of them. The thing is, can he be consistent and do it during the season?
I tell you what, he's a guy that at the beginning of the offseason, I said to anybody who would listen, if Tompkins is on the roster at the beginning of the year, I don't think it's good for the Patriots offense. But he looks like the kind of guy who's got that chip on his shoulder. We know the background. We know the history. He seems like, you know what, just all I want is a chance. And when he's given that chance, kid seems to be making the most of it.
He flashes.
There's some perseverance there.
He flashes, and it's not fair to put a label on a guy, but his problem is consistency.
Correct.
You know, the more he's out there.
That's the problem of every young guy.
Right.
Though.
The more he's out there, the more he gets exposed. But he does flash, no doubt. Won a game for us last year.
And what a spot, too, you think about that, with a rookie player. In that, and he takes a, you know, that was a fastball by Brady that he threw right there.
Oh, yeah.
With 5 seconds left in the game.
Correct.
Mike from Rancho Cucamonga, California. How many projected defensive tackles do you think we'll have on the roster? I think we will have 4 or 5. Wilfork, Salinga, Kelly, Easley, and Jones. Also, Easley and Jones will take time at defensive end. I think they'll have probably one more after that. Defensive tackles. Okay, specifically tackles. I get you. Yeah, probably 4. Yeah. Salinga, maybe not. Maybe, I don't know, Armin Armstead eventually, someday. I don't know what his deal is.
But I would stop lighting a candle for Armin Armstead.
Poor Armin Armstead.
Whatever.
I feel terrible for the guy.
Why? What's going on with him?
Kick it on the field?
Yeah, it's just one thing after another. Even Bill seemed to feel, you know, in his words, showed some sympathy for the guy. You know, no one's worked harder than him. But he's got this infection or virus or something, or nobody really knows. But some illness that has kept him off the field.
If you're counting on him being a part of your 2014 roster, I think you're making a mistake. I think you need to plan on him not being there. And
he's icing if he gets
Jones, Saliga, you know.
The Miami guy? Pardon me? Miami guy?
Who?
Armstead.
Wow, he really, USC.
Yeah, he was great, and then he had the heart thing.
He went to the CFL. And
did well there.
Oh, right. He's the CFL guy.
Yeah.
The last player in the CFL that Brian remembers is Doug Flutie.
Warren Moon.
Warren Moon. Alex is in Chicago, and he's on the A-Stick and Hotline.
Tad up in the construction group.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, Fred, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to call in and say, subject that you guys just touched on was the first few games are going to be all bad quarterbacks.
I think that's going to really benefit us because we play our best football after the first past, you know, first leg of the games, past Thanksgiving. So I really think that's going to benefit us. I think we should win those games and hopefully carry that momentum into the second part of the season with us.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, the Patriots have made some really bad quarterbacks look pretty good, so I don't rule anything out. You never know what team's going to emerge. It won't be the Raiders, but, you know, Miami could emerge this year. And so, Geno, you know, the Jets always give the Patriots a hard, tough time because they know us so well.
They split up with them last year.
Right. So none of these games are
gimmies. Both those teams split with them.
None of these games are gimmies. But in terms of simply pass coverage, you're right.
All right, thanks, Bert.
Okay, Alex. Cody's also in Illinois. He says the Patriots don't have very much cap room, so if both Andre Johnson and Dustin Keller were on their radar, they could only pick one. I think some fans forget that and want the Patriots to get both. Who do you guys think would be the better acquisition?
Well, I'm going to disagree with that from a cap space standpoint. Dustin Keller's not going to cost you anything.
You shouldn't.
Out in the street. It's July 10th. There's a reason why he's out in the street.
But if you could only choose one.
Wasn't he hurt?
Yeah.
He blew out his knee.
Multiple ligaments.
Yeah. He made Gronkowski's injury look like a boo-boo that you get in the schoolyard. Yeah. That's how bad his knee was.
If you could only pick one, Andre Johnson, money's not a factor. Andre Johnson or 100% healthy Dustin Keller, who would you rather have on this team?
Andre Johnson.
You would rather have Andre Johnson.
Dustin Keller.
I might say the tight end. You know?
You might be an idiot.
Oh, wow. He's calling me an idiot.
I said maybe.
Wow. Okay.
Really? Dustin Keller?
Dustin Keller.
He's a good player, but Andre Johnson is a great player.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think you're probably right. You're probably right, but... Right now, they're lacking at tight end even more than wide receiver.
Right, they have a fragile Gronkowski, and Humanao Anui, and DJ Williams,
James Devlin, you know,
right, and Devlin's going to make the team,
right,
for sure.
They can go get Zach Sudfeld back.
Take him up
Denver.
It was with the Jets.
Jets.
Yeah, he's. Stinks.
Oh, you should read PFW once in a while and do some. Just
I skim PFW.
Did my ad get in there? That's all he cares about. Jake writes in.
It never does.
Jake from Salt Lake. If one of the following pairs of players were lost for the season due to injury or whatever.
I love the hypotheticals on this show.
Which pair would be most devastating? Okay, so there's three pairs. Which pair would be most devastating to lose? Pair one is Tom Brady and Jamie Collins. Pair two is Darrell Revis and Rob Gronkowski. And pair three is Chandler Jones and Nate Solder.
Whatever the pairing is with Brady.
Absolutely.
Right. Brady and Matt Smith is devastating.
But Revis and Gronkowski would take the wind out of a lot of fans' sails. Yeah. Including
Brady
mine.
And Eric Scalavino would win.
Yeah, that wouldn't be...
I'm going to do my best Peter King impersonation here, but I had the opportunity of asking Revis the other day. I said, do you get how big of a deal you are in New England after you've only been here for such a short amount of time? And he goes... No, I really don't. I said, you're a pretty big deal. There's a lot of people who are counting
on
you.
You better play well.
And he's kind of looking at me. He goes, yeah, I didn't realize it. He goes, but pressure doesn't really bother me. He goes, that's good to hear. But
yeah.
He goes, it's nothing that I haven't faced before.
Well, when you talk about Revis Island, when he's the one talking about, he's putting pressure on himself all the time anyway.
Right.
Yeah. He's got the quarterback swagger.
He's absolutely willing to bet on himself.
Yeah. Isn't that what you want?
Right.
Strippers writes in, the NFL supplemental draft is over. With no players selected for the second consecutive year, the four players eligible are now free agents. And I have no idea who they are, so don't ask. Maybe Brian can look it up.
I'll do that.
We've got a few minutes left. Let's shoot through some of these emails. Pete in Augusta, Maine. How much do you think schemes, play calling, game plan played a factor in last year's losses? Schemes, play calling, and game plan. I think very little. I think that it came down to execution. I think they just didn't have the horses on offense. I mean, look at that Denver game. I mean, because really that's the only game that matters, right?
Absolutely.
That's the game that
ended
the season.
The only game that matters. And they got
They had no offense.
And they got beaten by a better team that day.
Right.
They had nothing.
Right.
And whatever the score was, the game felt like it would add two more scores and three more scores. Whatever the lead was insurmountable.
Tell me the game plan, scheme, or play calling that would have changed that outcome.
Right.
It didn't exist.
Right. Do you think that they went into the game going, let's see if we can give it to Blount on first down and him gain nothing, give it to him on second down and him gain one, and so we're faced with 3rd and 8 in Denver? I don't think that that's what they were looking for.
Let's see. Thanks for providing something to listen during the black hole dead period in the NFL. I don't think anyone should take the top NFL top 100 show seriously. Suggs is the 26th best player, 3 running backs in the top 10. Like the Pro Bowl, the show is just a popularity contest. A quick game. Say every player on the team tore his ACL. You're allowed to and want to donate your ACLs through Advanced Medicine. Who are the 2 players you would donate them to?
Tom Brady.
You have to take into account how injury prone they are so they don't injure another body part. Mine would be Tom Brady because part of me is in bed with Giselle. So, I mean, you know, you got to love that, right?
It's kind
of
creepy.
How about the creativity of the emailers in games and challenges? Tremendous.
Tom Brady and
Gronkowski, right?
No, I got to pick somebody on defense.
Revis.
Will Fork.
Yeah, he's too much toward the end for that position, you know?
I like to go close to the football.
Okay.
That's where good defense starts.
What about Chandler Jones? You know, young guy, give him, you know, you hate to see him cut down so early, so you give a part of your body.
I don't think they would want I'm older than all those guys. I don't think they want my ACLs.
But it's just a game, you know? All right.
You want the 4 supplemental draft eligible players? Wide receiver Chase Clayton from New Mexico, 6'2", 204. Linebacker Darius Lipford from North Carolina. Defensive tackle LaKendrick Ross from Virginia Lynchburg. And running back Traylon Sheed from SMU.
And Eldridge already wants the wide receiver because he's over 6 feet tall. So
he's academically ineligible.
Bill says that the defense 5-1. Oops, they went 5-1 the first 6 games. Did we say that they went 6-0? Somebody say that?
No, I don't think anybody said that. They were 4-0 going into the Saints game, weren't they? Or 4-0 after the Saints game, weren't they? Wasn't that a battle of undefeateds?
Sounds right.
I don't know. The first I watched loss the was games. The Bengals, right? The first loss was the Bengals?
Hold on.
Yes. In the rain.
Right.
Win against Buffalo, win against the Jets, win against Tampa, win against Atlanta. So they were 4-0 going into the Cincinnati game.
Right.
4-1. So they're 4-1 going into the New Orleans game. I think New Orleans, it was 4-1 New England against 5-0 New Orleans at the time.
Okay. Love the show, says Clayton in Auckland. Unfortunately, I can't listen to it live anymore as I'm living in New Zealand. But I always catch the show at some point in the week. Have a game for you guys. I took the starters from 2004. I use Pro Football Reference as my main source in a combination of last year's starters, this year's projected starters, and basically want you guys to pick which starter you would rather have, one season only. Don't pick 04 Brady because that means you get an extra 10 years out of him. Doesn't work like that. QB, current Brady or 04 Brady?
Can only have him for 1 year?
Yeah.
04.
I think I'm going to take this year's.
Me too.
Brady.
See, this is my point.
Everyone sucks but me.
He's a better quarterback all around than he was in 04.
Correct.
He just knows the game better.
Correct.
Okay.
Ridley or Dillon?
Pretty sure he won his 3rd Super Bowl that year.
Ridley or Dillon? He's not serious about that question, is he?
Come on. Vereen or Falk?
I do not care.
As your second running back.
Falk. 7 days a week. Nothing against Shane Vereen, but I'm biased. I love Kevin.
Right.
Edelman or Branch?
Except for one thing about Kevin Falk. I don't know. Can that be discussed or not be discussed?
He had fumbling problems early.
No. Oh. Somebody's given Kevin Falk some bad advice or not giving him any advice. The Kevin Falk wound up on that CNN.
Hernandez?
That was bad.
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
He was involved in it.
A college alumnus, somebody I went to school with, produced it, though. But really? I haven't watched it. Yeah, it was. I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
but you think everything stinks?
No, incorrect. That was a poor decision by Kevin Falk to go on national TV and comment about Aaron Hernandez. In my opinion,
maybe he got some cash.
All right. Well, the rest of these, some of these are kind of no-brainers, like Wendell or Copen. I'd take Copen. You know, Edelman or Branch, quickly.
Moss or Donald Hayes.
Branch.
Yeah. Dobson or Givens.
Givens.
Amendola or Patton.
Straight cash, homie.
Patton.
Gronkowski and Hooman or Graham. And Hooman. I don't know what that means.
Solder, Gronk.
Solder or Light.
Light.
Mankins or Andruzzi.
Mankins.
Of course. Connolly or Neal. I think Neal.
Neal.
Yeah. Volmer or Gorin. Volmer, right? Brandon Gorin.
John Hanna or Brandon Gordon.
Jones or Seymour. I mean, Seymour, right? I can't go on with this.
What I was trying to say on Tuesday is those teams are better than these teams.
Yeah. I mean, he's got Revis or Law, Ty Law. I mean, I love Ty Law, but I think Revis is better, right?
He is. That thinking at least you're in the same neighborhood.
Ty Law. Yeah. I take Ty Law.
Gostkowski or Vinatieri.
Come on
now. Oh, boy.
Oh, I feel lightheaded.
All right, that's going to be it. We'll end on that note. Thanks.
Great note to end on, Fred.
Thanks, Matt No Sock Smith, for stopping in.
Thank
Ryan
you for the
Morey,
invite.
Earlier this week. Thanks, Jackie Britton from Patriots Today, for filling in. The boys will be back next week, so we'll see you next Tuesday.
So it won't be Fred and the fill-ins.
See you next Tuesday.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.